Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts Live, speaking in person high above the city of Atlanta, overlooking majestic Buckhead from the 10th floor of the We Believe America Tower. All right, this afternoon, I have a very special guest. He's a friend of mine. His name is Jim Kenney, a former naval officer. He worked at Walk Through the Bible with me for many years. And he also worked on the last presidential campaign for the Arkansas governor. And he is now currently living in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and tomorrow being the election in North Carolina, or the referendum on gay marriage, I thought I would bring him on and let's just talk a little bit about what we've got going on there. Good afternoon, Jim.
How are you, Jack? It's been a long time since we've talked.
It has indeed. How I've just introduced you a little bit. I suppose you could probably hear that as you were waiting to come on.
Yeah.
But let's just get right to it. Tell us and the listeners what's happening up there in North Carolina right now, and how do you see the outcome of this referendum tomorrow?
Well, we don't know for sure how it's going to turn out, but in the early voting, Republicans increased their early voting numbers over the previous primary by about 129%, and the Democrats did not see they were down 9 or 10% from the last primary. So we think we got some people to the polls in the early voting. The public opinion polls show us leading by about 16 or 18%, but probably ultimately going to revolve around turnout and who gets to the polls tomorrow. We've got a rally tonight. The city, the county commission here in Forsyth County is taking up a resolution to condemn the amendment and ask people to vote against traditional marriage. So I'm on my way down there right now. We're going to have a little rally and see if we can help those folks see the light. The history of the amendment is interesting. You know, 30 states have passed the amendment. Actually, 31 have. California has passed it twice, and twice been turned off by activist judges, the last time by a single judge who was himself a homosexual and wanted to marry his partner.
Right.
We are the only state in the Southeast that doesn't have a marriage amendment protecting traditional marriage. And the Democrats controlled both the House and the Senate here in North Carolina for 125 years. In November of 2010, the Republicans took over both houses of Congress for the first time in 125 years. Well, this amendment had been bouncing around in Raleigh for 12 or 14 years, and every time when the assembly met, it was sent to committee, a committee that never met and never reported out. So essentially, the Democratic leadership killed the marriage amendment for more than a decade. Republicans, in part, ran on the fact that they would at least bring it to a vote and let the people of North Carolina decide how they wanted to define marriage. So, good to their word, they actually got it on the primary ballot, and we vote tomorrow. Now, Republicans wanted it on the general election ballot in November, but the only compromise they could reach to get enough Democrats to vote it out of the House and Senate was that we would do it in the primary, because the Democrats were concerned that an issue like this would rally the conservative base and hurt them in the general election in the fall.
Well,
so that's where we stand right now.
I can see why that would be bothersome to them. All right, now let's talk a little bit about this. I noticed that whenever someone just brings up the subject of gay marriage, the very first thing that I hear from people is, why shouldn't they be able to get married? It isn't fair that they don't. Why is that? Tell me, you've heard that 1,000 times.
Sure.
Or at least I suspect you have. Why is this such an important issue?
Well, there are several. There are several reasons. First of all, we have tried. I've done about 40 radio shows over the last 6 weeks. Little 1 minute, we call it marriage moments, explaining why we should vote for the amendment. And we have never. It's not an anti-gay amendment. It's not a anti-anybody amendment. It's a pro-God, pro-marriage amendment defending God's definition of marriage. Our opponents, I've been amazed at how deceitful their attacks are. They've said, for example, that domestic violence will increase if we pass this law because heterosexual and homosexual couples living together won't have the protection of the law. Well, first of all, that's an absolute lie. But secondly, 30 states have passed amendments, and there's been no spike in domestic violence. So there's no empirical evidence even that that kind of thing would be a problem. Then they say it's going to toss. Go ahead.
Let me ask you this. Have there been any states that have passed a law saying that it is okay to have gay marriage? It seems to me that Rhode Island or Delaware.
Well, there are several that have. Massachusetts and Iowa, the activist courts got involved and forced the change in the definition of marriage on those folks without voter approval. There are, I believe, seven states, Oregon, Connecticut, New York, that have pro-gay, pro-same-sex language in their laws to permit marriages between same-sex couples. It's interesting. One of the arguments that have been brought up is that it'll devastate our economy because businesses won't come to North Carolina. But the most recent Moody report, not studying this issue, but studying the states and rating the states in terms of their business-friendly atmosphere and their business success, 9 of the top 10 states in growth over the last 5 years have marriage amendments in their constitution. And 7 of the least productive, slowest-growing states have accommodated the same-sex marriage in their legal system. So, in fact, the opposite is true. It does not impact business in a negative way. It seems to impact business in a positive way.
Well, I would suspect that that's because the places that it passes are the states that have been controlled by the Democrats and that have large state governments and frequently, for example, California and New York, people have left left and right just because of the high state taxes. So, you get big government. I mean, it tends to do that. But I want to return to my original question about it not being fair. Why is it fair for homosexuals not to be permitted to be married? What is it that you would say, or is there something that can be addressed that talks about it being fair? Because it's fairness that seems to be the thing that troubles people who don't have deep convictions about it, and we live in a nation where there are multiplied millions that don't have convictions about much of anything, that if it weren't for bumper stickers, wouldn't have any political viewpoint. So they're the ones that, say, well, yeah, just on the face of it, it seems unfair. What would you say to that? What would be the specific thing that you would address to that?
Well, I would say, first of all, that there is nothing in our amendment or to my knowledge, and the other state amendments that preclude people forming contractual relationships, that is, dealing with their will, dealing with their relationships with children, if there happen to be children that are adopted or come with one of the couples as a natural parent. There's nothing that precludes. In fact, our amendment specifically says nothing in this amendment is to preclude any persons from being able to form personal contracts, nor to prohibit the courts from adjudicating those contracts. So it's simply and very typically and ultimately all about the term marriage and what a marriage is, and that's God's domain, not ours. So we don't pursue the idea that you can't form a contract and you can't live together. We're not chasing you into your bedroom here, but we're not going to let you tell us that God's plan for how we're going to handle all of this is wrong, that his definition of marriage established in the first chapter of Genesis, where he created it, he ordained it, he blessed it, and then the second chapter where he expanded on that, and then Jesus quoted him when he was asked about the marriage relationship. It's not up for conversation. What is a marriage? A marriage is God's institution, and it's between one man and one woman. Not only does he endorse that, but he condemns any other kind of intimate sexual relationship besides the sexual relationship inside the marriage. He says the marriage bed is undefiled, but all other forms of sexual intimacy, heterosexual or homosexual, are outside of God's plan. Which brings me to one of the basic arguments that doesn't get made very often. But that is, if you would like to have God's blessing, then you need to do it God's way. Our founders understood this. Let me read to you from the preamble to the North Carolina Constitution and see if our founders didn't understand that we needed to do it God's way to get God's blessing. Here's what they said. This goes back to the 1700s when the original North Carolina Constitution was drafted. We, the people of the state of North Carolina, grateful to Almighty God, the sovereign ruler of nations, for our civil, political, and religious liberties, and acknowledging our dependence on him for the continuation of those blessings to us and to our posterity, do for a more certain security of those blessings and for a better government of this state, ordain and establish its constitution. So our forefathers understood that in order to have God bless your community, bless your state, bless your society, your culture, you've got to do it God's way. And when we stand up and spit in God's face, we are suggesting to God that we don't need his blessing any longer. And I would suggest, if you look around, we've been doing that for quite a while as a nation, and I think withdrawing his hand of blessing. So,
we're certainly in debt, and we can't pay for it, and we have no way of being able to pay for it, particularly with 70% of our energy needs coming from other countries and only 30% coming from the U.S., when we are literally drowning in oil and have at least as large a reserve as Saudi Arabia. So clearly that's true. All right, so the whole thing of wanting to stay within the framework of our founding fathers, that this is the tradition that they have built for us, and that for us to continue to be the greatest nation that has ever existed, we must return to those principles, and if we do not, we will fall out of the flow of blessing that has made us great. Is that a fair statement?
I believe that's absolutely right. And one of the cards that the opponents rustle up, and it plays with, kind of into your question, is who's the government to tell me who I can love? I should be able to love whoever I want to. Well, if love were the basic standard of marriage, then you should be able to marry your sister. You should be able to marry three or four people. You should be able to marry same-sex partners. Love is not the ultimate decider of this relationship. If there's not a single standard for marriage,
everybody loves.
If there's not a single standard for marriage, there's no standard at all.
Yeah.
So we have to defend that standard. Now, have we accommodated bad lifestyle choices? Yes, because the bill says we're not going to. Nothing in this amendment precludes people from making personal contracts and developing their own personal lifestyle and relationships. The other issue about this thing called love, what if God is loving? You know, that's a bad definition of love. When you think what it means is God just throws his arms open and embraces people and we sit around the campfire singing Kumbaya. God loves us so much that he tells us the truth. He loves a heroin addict, but he's not going to leave a heroin addict in the middle of those bad lifestyle choices. He is going to call him to repentance. He's going to call him to purity. He's going to restore his life if he will turn and embrace God's standard. And God does that because he loves him, not because he doesn't love him. And I would say the same thing is true in the marriage relationships.
Well, lest people think that we're just picking on Democrats, I want to just at this point throw in that both Barack Obama and Joe Biden have both come out in favor of man and woman as the definition of marriage, which in some ways I actually it is a bit surprising, particularly for at least
just in the last 2 days. Just in the last 2 days, Biden's been quoted with headlines even in the paper saying he's not uncomfortable with gay marriage. So he's evolving his position. Bill Clinton is making robocalls around the state today asking people to defeat the amendment. So, by the way, I don't think God's a Republican or Democrat. I think God is God alone, and it's his standard. Whether you have a R or a D after your name or an I for independent, we ultimately ought to be making God's standard and using our best wisdom to understand his principles and his purposes. That's where blessing flows.
All right, Jim, you were talking just a second ago about Joe Biden's position evolving. I'm not familiar with that. Explain that a little bit to our viewers, please.
He just made a public statement to the press probably over the weekend, maybe Friday, no later than Friday, in which he said that he is not the least bit uncomfortable with gay marriage and gay couples consummating their relationship in a marriage commitment. Also, the Secretary of Education, Secretary Arnn, came out with a very similar statement over the weekend. Now the gay community is pressing Obama to get off the duff and acknowledge what the people in his administration are saying.
Well, you know, I can see why they would. This is in the same way that the pipeline was not signed by Obama because of the environmentalists, which are key constituency for him. He has to keep them together, and I would say that the gay community would be equally as in bed with the progressives and wanting President Obama reelected.
Absolutely,
so
they are.
In order to keep that group together, his position is going to have to change at least a little bit. But at the same time, he's really in a pretty tight spot because if he comes out, he's at war with the Catholic Church right now on another issue and about abortion and making it required for Catholic hospitals and universities to provide that. So he's at war with them. If he came out with and said that he was for gay marriage, it would take that group which is kind of in the middle. I mean, there are a lot of Catholics that would be opposed to him and a lot that really like him. It's different than the evangelical community, where he doesn't have much support at all. But
he doesn't have much support at all.
Right. But among Catholics, he does.
I don't know how he, without an adoring press, I don't know how he gets away with some of the things he says with a straight face. The very same day that he was chastised by the Supreme Court for considering overturning Obamacare because it was voted, in his words, by a substantial, solid majority. Of course, there was no Republican votes, all Democrat votes. It won by 6 votes in the House. And
I remember Bart Stupak, and he went with them at the last second, where it would have died in the House of Representatives. And if it weren't for Senator Nelson and who was it, the Louisiana Purchase, the female, I forgot her name.
Yeah, the senator from Louisiana. Well,
yeah,
also there were four senators that voted for it that never stood for election. They were appointed to their positions because people had retired or died or been ill. But the very same day that he was making that case, he had his lawyers in court in New York asking the courts to overturn DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which was passed by 414 votes in the House and by 85 votes in the Senate. Truly bipartisan support for a Defense of Marriage Act. And he's said you can't overturn Obamacare because of the strong support it had, but you've got to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act because it's wrong. So I don't know how he gets away with talking out of both sides of his mouth and the press lets him get away with it, but he does.
Well, that certainly has been true of him throughout his administration, and we'll see what happens in the next 6 months.
He announced his candidacy Saturday in Ohio, and there were empty seats in the stadium. In 2008, wherever he went, there were standing room only crowds and people in line outside and adoring, cheering people, and so. The blush is off the apple here. We're beginning to see some of the soft spots. So I'm confident that we will not give him four more years.
Well, that's a confidence I don't necessarily share. I wish I did. But I think that there are a lot of people that have a real vested interest in him continuing. Now, let me just say this. In 2008, when he ran and he had this huge wave of support, because he's very articulate, he can be very engaging and sharp, and people are looking for hope, and they certainly didn't see much of it, in the last couple of years in the Bush administration. So now the alternative that's being presented is maybe a safe one, from a Republican perspective, but certainly does not have the excitement factor or the wow factor that Barack Obama has.
Rasmussen does some interesting polling in which he asks, and it's a continuous poll and it rolls. So he has 3 days worth of polling, and tomorrow 2 days ago will fall off and the new numbers will be added in. So it's a continuing, evolving polling number. And he asks, do you strongly support Obama's policies? Do you support Obama's policies? Do you disapprove of Obama's policies, or do you strongly disapprove of Obama's policies? And then he throws out the mushy middle. Anybody that says, well, I kind of like him or I kind of don't like him, he throws those numbers out, and he comes up with what I guess I'm calling an enthusiasm gap or enthusiasm number. And for the last year, those strongly opposing Obama's policies, according to the Rasmussen polls, have never dipped below 40%. Often getting as high as 44%. And Obama's numbers strongly approving have rarely gotten above 25%. So at his very best day, he's 19 or 20 points upside down in the enthusiasm gap, those who strongly oppose him versus those who strongly support him. So I think that's an interesting poll to follow.
I'll give you a perfect example. I have a daughter that was graduating the University of Georgia, and, as much as I tried, I couldn't dissuade her from voting for Barack Obama. When she graduated and was unable to find a job and ended up going back to graduate school, a lot of her perspective changed, and that was the year before Obama was elected. At the University of Georgia, 81% of those who were graduating got jobs, and 19% didn't. The year that he was elected, and ever since, it's almost a complete reversal. So there are people that just are unable to find jobs, and those that do are underemployed. And I live here in Atlanta, where you used to live, and Atlanta has been one of the big growing cities in America, and you know, the premier city in the Southeast, and there are businesses shut down all over the place. You see boarded up businesses, and it's like we're being told that the recovery is at hand, and that things are getting better, and that unemployment is only 8.1 now, and isn't that great, when it should be in the fives or less. And, we're just not able to get around the things that ail us. And, of course,
Obama's solution to the college kids not getting jobs is go back home and move in with mom and dad, and we'll put you back on their health insurance. That's what they went to college for, is to go back home and live in mom and dad's basement. You know, that's what they wanted. And the real number to look at, because the only reason unemployment is at 8.1% is because so many people have quit looking for work and they don't get counted anymore. The number that came out with the latest unemployment figure is the employment figure. And only 63.6% of Americans of working age have a job. That's the lowest number in the last 30 years. Only 63.6% of Americans of a working age have a job. Now, that's
where did you get that number from?
It's in the same report where you got the 8.1%.
Wow.
If you go to, I don't know if you where you go on the internet, if you go to realclearpolitics.com, it's a good website. They have both conservative and liberal editorials and articles all over the every day, fresh new stuff. And that, I follow there. I follow thehill.com, which is a very nonpartisan look at what's going on in Capitol Hill and what's happening there. And we have the lowest percentage of Americans of working age working than at any time in the last 30 years. The only reason that if the same number of people were seeking work that were seeking work when Obama took office, unemployment would be 11.1%.
Well, I actually believe that. It's obvious to anybody that just takes a look around and sees what's happening to people. It's very difficult. Now, tell me what you really think is going to happen with this vote tomorrow. What does your gut tell you?
I think we'll carry the day. I'm hoping it's 60% or better. It may be closer than that because they're very well organized. The early voting, I had some folks out handing out phone cards to help people understand the amendment and how to vote, and they said that the Democrats had busloads of students from Wake Forest University and Winston-Salem College just driving up and dumping them out at the door to vote by the busload. But even so, the Republican turnout was 129% of 2010, and the Democrat turnout was down 10% from 2010 primary. So,
the state of North Carolina is a big one to go from blue to red. Is that going to happen in this next election, do you think?
Oh, the Democrat Party here is in such disarray. The governor is so disliked that she didn't even run for reelection. Her unfavorable was so high. The chairman of the Democratic Party has had to resign. The Democratic Party itself has had some sexual harassment charges and people fired over. They're just in total disarray in North Carolina. Now, does that mean that Obama won't get his Acorn folks out and there'll be all kinds of fraudulent efforts to bring people to the polls? I'm certain there will be, because this was the closest. North Carolina was the state he won by the smallest margin in 2000.
Right.
He won by 0.4 of a point. So,
we're running out of time now. So, Jim, tell us what you're doing so that people can find you if they're interested.
Well, I'd love to have them come to check out our website. It's called inspireandignite.com. We post a blog every day. I call it the Political Proverb. It's about a minute long. You can subscribe to it and get it downloaded to your MP3, or you can go to the website and read the transcript. And it's every day a discussion about some political event or headline that's going on and we try to bring a biblical worldview to it, try to put it in perspective of a Christian worldview. And,
well, that's great, and that's all the time we have. Thank you so much, everybody, and thank you for being our guest, Jim. Bye-bye now.
All right, I expect my payment in the mail soon.